We invite you to stay tuned for a special series of Bible studies on the book of Revelation. Your instructor is missionary and Bible teacher David Long. Yes, this is the Emmaus Bible Hour, a program for you and your family. A time to study the Bible together.
With the work of judgment and cleansing finished in every department, we are now given a view of the eternal state, full of symbolism, of course, since our present vocabulary, bounded as it is by the little world of our experience, simply is deficient in terms to express or describe the things that shall be hereafter. The final winding up passage is divided into three parts. That is, chapters 21 and 22 are divided into three parts by the words which are to be noted: I saw, 21:1, come and I will show thee, 21:9, and he showed me, chapter 21 and verse 1. The first and last portions would appear to be the eternal state as such, timeless and perfect, where all is new and unstained joy and pleasure. The middle portion is the last of our parenthetical inserts given to describe origin, character, purpose, and destiny of the church, without placing it in a chronological context at all, or referring to it exclusively in any particular phase of time. We have had similar inserts for a similar purpose, in chapter 7, for example, on the witnesses during the tribulation, and then later on in that chapter, on those converted through them. In chapter 10, we have had one on the angel declaring the end of all delay. In chapter 12, we have had parentheses on the conflict of the ages between Israel with her Messiah and the dragon. In chapter 13, we had the same thing on the two satanic agents of the last days of earth. In chapters 17 and 18, we had the same thing on the false church, her course, and her destiny. Her destruction, actually, and yet that had not taken place. So it was again outside the regular chronological time schedule. It seems, indeed, that the description of this harlot church, her character, her course, and her destiny, demand the same kind of outline for the true church, and along the same lines. It is instructive to put these two together, as they are described in these two passages. The harlot church in 17 and 18, and now the true church in chapter 20. Neither of the descriptive outlines is directly related to any one time. It is character which is being delineated. In the case of Babylon, to explain her doom. In the case of the bride of Christ, to help us understand her reward and her glorious future with Christ in the purposes of God. This is why there is some overlapping and some apparent merging with more than one period of her course. In chapter 21, verse 2, for example, we see the church related to the new heaven and new earth of the eternal state. But in 21, verse 24, it would seem to be in relation to the millennial earth, since there are nations and kings, and these are said to bring their glory and their honor into it. This is repeated in verse 26. And it seems clear that nations and kings speak of earth rather than heaven, and they show that the church is accessible on earth to them throughout that period so that they can bring their glory and honor into it. in verse 12, the gates of the city have the names of the 12 tribes. And we must remember that in Scripture, gates speak of rule. Compare Ruth chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, with Genesis 19:1 and verse 9, and Matthew 16, verse 18. The church is in the place of rule as the queen consort of the Lamb. So her gates open toward Israel as places of rule and judgment. But her foundations are not in Israel. They are in the 12 apostles. Verse 14. And compare this with Ephesians 2, verses 19 and 20. In chapter 22, verses 3 to 5, we are given the seven basic characteristics of the eternal state as follows. 1. No more curse, and this surely is perfect sinlessness. 2. The throne of God and of the Lamb is in it. That is perfect authority. 3. His servants serve him. That is perfect obedience. 4. They shall see his face. That is perfect communion. 5. His name is on their foreheads. That is perfect consecration. 6. There is no night there. That is perfect happiness and bliss. And 7. They reign with him forever and ever. That is perfect glory. The central or pivotal one, of course, is communion, seeing his face. There are three blessings on either side of this. For from this seeing of his face, everything else flows. And all these blessings are the direct result of Christ's work on the cross, so that to him will be given all the praise and the glory. It only remains now to gather up the ends and tie in what is related. In 22:7, for example, we have repeated at the end what has been stated at the beginning in chapter 1, verse 4, that the teachings of this book are to be kept or obeyed, especially in view of the fact that he says he is coming quickly or soon. See also verses 9 and 14. The book is not for purposes of study or debate as an end in themselves. It is intended to mold our conduct and develop our life. In chapter 22, verse 8, we read that in John's case, this unveiling of the glory of Christ caused worship. Worship and obedient service will be the result in our lives if we understand this book and live in the light of it. Three times over, his coming is said to be quickly, verses 7, 10, and 12, while in verse 10, the time is said to be at hand. And finally, since this is God's last word, we are told in verse 18 that from that time on the severest penalties would be applied to anyone adding anything to the words of this book or taking anything away. The New Testament prophets spoke freely from God as they were inspired to do so, since the New Testament was not complete at that time, and divine guidance was necessary. In 1 Corinthians 13, verses 8 to 10, in between two chapters dealing with ministry and teaching in the church, we are told that prophecies shall fail or stop. And this will happen when that which is perfect is come. That time came with the completion of the final book of Holy Scripture, the book of Revelation. So the canon of the New Testament is complete. That which is perfect is come. And there is no longer need for prophecy. Indeed, we know now that anyone who presumes or professes to have an additional word must be a liar and under the direct judgment of God. With the last word of teaching given, the book and the scriptures close with the promise, "Surely I will," and the heart of all instructed Christians, those who believe, responds with these words, "Even so, come, Lord